Averis B'nai Torah presents The Shmooze, an engaging and motivating Mussar and Hashkafa series that deals with real-life issues.
Every year, in honor of my mother's Yahrzeit, to say a particular Shmooze that I feel is very apropos, very significant, and very important. Some of the best shmuzim I've said were said on the Yahrzeit, number 23, number 61, for those who follow numbers. I believe, Mitzvah Hashem, this shmuz is a very fundamental and very significant shmuz. It deals with the Yesodos of Emunah. So I begin my words with just a introduction that some of the concepts we're going to discuss this evening are not simple, and Mitzvah Hashem, Hashem should guide us properly, they should be presented clearly. The shir is Hilui Nishmas, my mother Sheinanecha Bas Shalom, all that I am, all that I ever will be is because of her. After many, many months of witnessing Hashem's mastery over every facet of this creation, Hashem gave the Klal Yisrael the ultimate test of Emunah, and that was to take the Seh, to take the very God of the Mitzrim and to tie it to the bedpost, keep it there for 4 days, and allow the Mitzrim to know clearly what was going to happen, and then right before leaving Mitzrayim to Shecht, to slaughter their God. The Gemara tells us, Keha Shineim, their teeth were chattering because this was the ultimate audacity to take the very God of Mitzrayim and to literally tie it to the bedpost and then to slaughter it was such an affront that the Mitzrayim were quaking. However, because of the clarity with which Hashem showed himself at that point, they could not say anything. And in fact, the Klal Yisrael did just that. But Hashem gave very specific instructions to Moshe that not only should they shecht, should they slaughter the sheep, there's a very particular thing you should do. Take an agudas ezov, take a group of some type of plant, dip it into the blood, and then touch it to the mashkov, touch it to the lintel, to the doorpost, and it should be a sign. What's the sign? The sign is that that's a Jewish house, and when that sign is on the Jewish house, when the Malach HaMovis, when the Malach comes that evening to kill all the firstborn Mitzrim, it will pass over the Jewish homes, hence the name Passover, and that's in fact what happened. Now, we know that in fact it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we know that it was Hashem Himself, but interestingly enough, there's a very specific point that Rashi brings out in why it is that there had to be this simon. Not only was this simon significant in the sense that it was the sign that this was a Jewish house, the pasuk also says, "Atem lo teitzu, do not leave your homes." Says Rashi, "Magid she'achas shenasan rishus l'mashchis l'chavel." Once permission was given to the destructive angel to destroy, "Eino mavchim bein tzadik l'rosha," the destroyer does not distinguish between tzadik or rosha. Therefore, the B'nai Yisrael were told as follows: not only should you put this sign on your doorpost, make sure you don't leave. Because if you leave, you might be killed. If you stay in your house, the sign is on the doorpost. But if you leave your house, you might be killed. Why? Because once permission is given to the destructive forces to destroy, they don't distinguish between good, between bad. Apparently that is not speaking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but rather Hashem allowed certain forces, certain malachei chavola, certain damaging forces out that evening. And basically the Klal Yisrael was told, stay inside, because if you leave, you might die. And that's how Rashi explains this pasuk. And the problem with this, I think, is rather obvious, and that is that it does not seem to be very just at all. If you have a Jewish man, he's being told as follows: if you stay in your house, you live. If you go into the street, you may well be killed. Now, why is that? He didn't suddenly become guilty by leaving his house. He wasn't an innocent man in his house, guilty of death by leaving the house. There's no sin called leaving the house. Yet Rashi seems to be telling us that if you're in the house, you will not be killed. If you're out of the house, you might well be killed. Why? Because once the destructive angel is given permission to destroy, he doesn't distinguish between innocent, between guilty. He destroys wholesale. Who's ever in his path, he just wipes out. That seems to be contradictory to everything we understand as justice, as mishpat, as contradictory to the way that Hashem runs the world, and it sounds very, very difficult for us to understand. And I'd like to spend some time this evening seeing if we can understand this. But to do this, what I'd like to first do is explain what I consider the most single, most misunderstood perush maybe in Shas. There is an Or HaChaim that's often misquoted, very much misunderstood, and I'd like to share with you what that is. There's an Or HaChaim that's quoted as saying, supposedly, that man has free will to decide who will live and who will die outside of Hashem's control. What's this Or HaChaim? It's on a pasuk in Chumash. The pasuk says, "Vayishma Ruvain v'tzeleu miyodam." Ruvain heard that the brothers wanted to kill Yosef. Ruvain saved Yosef. And on this, the Or HaChaim is bothered by a problem. And that problem is that Ruvain did not save Yosef. Why? Ruvain knew that the brothers were attempting to kill Yosef. What did Ruvain do? Ruvain took Yosef and put him in a pit. The pit was filled with snakes, with scorpions. He did not deliver Yosef to a plush luxury hotel. He put him into a snake pit. Snakes, scorpions, which was another way of killing him. So the Or HaChaim is bothered by, what do you mean, Vayishma Ruvain v'atzeleu miyodam? Ruvain heard and he saved him. Ruvain didn't save him. He put him right into the pit, into the same danger. Says the Or HaChaim as follows, and I'd like to quote the exact language. V'sha'odam bal bechira, because a man is capable of free choice. V'yochol harug mishlo neschayiv misa, and a man can kill someone who's not chayiv misa, who does not have a death penalty on his head. Mashenkin chayas ros, which is not true about wild animals. Lo yifku ba'odam, they will not meet a man in lo yischayiv misa l'shamayim, unless he's obligated by a death penalty from heaven. Seemingly, the Or HaChaim is saying, man and animals are quite distinct. An animal can only kill a human if that human was paskin l'misa. If Beis Din Shamala said, this human being shall die, then the dogs, the lions, the bears are allowed to attack him, to carry out the Din Shamayim. However, man, that's not true. Man can kill another human being even if that other human being did not have a Din of being killed, even if in a Shamayim they didn't agree to it. It seems from the Or HaChaim that he's saying that a human being, Ruvain, can kill Shimon, even though in a Shamayim they said Shimon should live. Ruvain has the capacity to kill Shimon, and that's the most misquoted, misunderstood Or HaChaim probably in Kol HaTorah Kula. And how do I know this? Because if you open anything that even remotely smacks of Jewish philosophy, any sefer from any Rishon, you quickly see that the concept is absolutely out of the question. I'll quote for you one Bir Halacha that's very clear. The Bir Halacha in the first Siman, when he quotes over the very basics of our Emunah system, Sefer Chinuch, he says, Lo yelach alakim acherim apanai, do not have any other God. Yamin shekadosh baruch hu ba'atzmum b'chvodo. What is this mitzvah? That a person should believe that Hashem himself, Mashgiach b'chol olamos, is the one who watches over all worlds. Ve'ein l'shum nivra koach. No creation has any power. Lasos dova bilti ritzono. No creation has any power to do anything outside the will of Hashem. And that is the basic bedrock understanding of our belief system. Hashem created the world, maintains the world, orchestrates this world. Nothing happens in this world that's not under the direct guidance, jurisdiction, control of Hashem. And there are many, many places where the Chovos Levavos says this again and again, that nothing can happen to a person without Hashem's absolute involvement, nothing for the good, nothing for the bad. Most Rishonim say this openly. But if you don't have enough proofs to this, let me share with you one very simple observation. There is an old minhag that the Jewish nation would fast before going to war. The reason they'd fast is because they were doing tshuva. If you pay attention to the tefillahs that David HaMelech said before he went to war, you'll quickly understand that if this Or HaChaim is correctly understood, David HaMelech was making a tremendous blunder. Why are you davening to God? Why are you saying, "Kol goyim sevavuni b'shem Hashem ki milam"? I cut these goyim to pieces in the name of Hashem. Hashem had nothing to do with it. Here was a man, your life was in that man's hands. Didn't you read the Or HaChaim? The Or HaChaim said that animals can't attack you unless you're chayiv misa. A human being is a baal bachir, a human being has free will. A human being could kill you whether Hashem wants it or not. David HaMelech, you're wasting your time davening. Tehillim is irrelevant. And what you quickly see is if this Or HaChaim is understood as people misquote it, then the concept of bitochon is absolutely ludicrous. Because I cannot trust in Hashem, because my life is in other people's hands, and I can't rely on Hashem because other people can determine my fate. And what you quickly understand is that there is no way in the world that the Or HaChaim meant this. Not only is it against all Rishonim, it's against the basic deus of our religion, and I dare say it would be heresy, it would be apikorsis to assume that that's what he means. And I'd like to share with you that I don't think he means that at all. But to understand what he means, I'd like to deal with a few issues this evening that are fundamental but require some understanding. Let me start with two questions. Question number one, I think, is a very obvious question. And that is, let's assume it's the middle of Pesach at some point, and you hear the bad news, your relative, your cousin, your wife, your sister, Rahman Flan has a terrible prognosis, they're not sure the person's going to make it. The first thing you do is you run into the Beis Medrash and you start davening and davening, and you ask and you beg, and you beg, beg, beg for mercy. I'd like to ask a very obvious question on that. If we accept that a person's din is set on Rosh Hashanah, mi yichye umi yamos, who will live and who will die is determined on Rosh Hashanah, why daven in the middle of Nisan? If that person was slated to live, it's decided. If that person was slated to die, it's decided. Right now is not the time of the decision. Why daven now if the decree is set? And that's question number one. But there's a second question that I think also is warranted on that very case. You get the news, you hear the story, and you have the Tehillim rally, and everybody gets together, and they daven, and they daven, and they daven, and here's a fundamental question. Imagine for a minute that that person is in a coma. What in the world is your tefillah going to do for that person? And let me explain to you what I mean. If you daven, I understand what happens. It changes you. You relate to Hashem on a different level. You see Hashem differently. You become more humble. You more clearly recognize your dependence upon Hashem. You become a different human being. Davening changes you. I see how it works there. But I don't see how my tefillah works for another human being. Hashem is the ultimate benefactor, the ultimate meitiv. Hashem would give anything to that person that that person possibly could be warranted to get, anything that person deserves. If that person is not getting this thing, that means that person doesn't deserve it. If so, what do my tefillahs change anything? How do my tefillahs change the person? The person is unaware of my davening. The person might be in a coma, might be asleep. But surely it doesn't change that person. So the whole concept of me davening for another human being sounds very difficult to understand. And let's deal with the first question. How could I daven in the middle of Nisan if the decree was set on Rosh Hashanah? Okay. There are basically two answers to that question. Let's imagine for a minute that this year it was set I should make $200,000. Make it a little bit sweeter. I'm supposed to make $700,000 this year. That was the decree on Rosh Hashanah. Let's even assume I become privy to that and I become aware that I'm having supposed to have a great financial year. So I take off, I take it easy, sleep late, don't bother working too much, and I just, you know, whatever, let the year sort of pass. I guarantee I will not make the $700,000. Why? Because there is a proviso, there's a caveat. You will make the exact amount of money set on Rosh Hashanah, provided one thing. You go about the derech hateva, you go about the ways of the world, you do your job as you're supposed to do your job, and then the amount of money you're supposed to get, you will get. If you sleep till 12 o'clock, if you quit your day job, and you start doing whatever, you will not get that amount of money. that amount of money you're going to get if you do what's expected of you. But if you don't, you're not going to get it. And that's rather obvious and well understood on the physical level of working. But I'd like to share with you what I consider a very interesting concept. And that is that davening is also hishtadlus. Davening is not some spiritual hocus-pocus sort of thing. Davening, requesting, begging from Hashem, is a hishtadlus, is an effort that a human being is supposed to engage in, and in fact is a big part of the proper derech hateva, the way of this world, the way that Hashem created the world and runs the world. And if in fact you are supposed to live this year, that might also be dependent upon something. Namely, that when you get the prognosis, when you hear the bad news, you do what an intelligent person should do. You turn to your Creator, and you beg for mercy, you daven, and that's the hishtadlus. That's what you're supposed to be doing. And if you don't do that, that might well be why you don't get what you're supposed to get. Much like not working guarantees you're not going to make the amount of money, not davening guarantees you're not going to get what you might have otherwise gotten. But there's a second answer to this question. The question is, how could I spend my time in Nisan davening when it's set already on Rosh Hashanah? And what's going to be? The answer is that it's not so simple. You see, a person's decree is set on Rosh Hashanah, but there are times when the question is reopened. There are times when the judgment is revisited, the issues are brought back onto the table, and a person is rejudged even if it's not Rosh Hashanah, not Yom Kippur. A person can be judged at different times of the year, and if originally they were given one decree, under certain circumstances, certain situations, the decree can be reopened. And one of the reasons we daven is because it might well be that I got a decree this past Rosh Hashanah for whatever, for poverty, for sickness, for whatever it may be, but I can reopen that judgment. I can reopen the issue and get a different decree. I'm a different human being now, and understanding that can help you dramatically in focusing on davening. These two answers, I think, we're going to see very quickly, are fundamental to understanding much of life. Now, let me share with you a very interesting observation. Right now, today, the average annual income in Bangladesh is $180 a year. That's the average annual income, $180 a year. Okay, now imagine for a minute the following. Imagine I go into my local savings and loan association and I apply for a mortgage. And I tell them, gentlemen, I'd like to buy a house. And they say, sure. Do you have the wherewithal to pay the mortgage? Do you have assets? Do you have the ability to pay the monthly payment? I say, absolutely. Do you know, gentlemen, I make 100 times the average salary of people in Bangladesh. 100 times their salary. At which point, the very polite loan officer would sign me up for welfare, Medicaid, Medicare, HUD, Section 8, and everything else imaginable, because if you're making $18,000 a year in this country, you are dirt poor. As a matter of fact, if you're making 1,000 times the amount of the average person in Bangladesh, you're not a rich man in our world. If you make $180,000 a year, you're doing well, but you're not wealthy. You're doing okay. You're doing well. 1,000 times the amount of money that the average person makes in that country, and you're not phenomenally rich in our world. And what you quickly see is that there are different standards of measurement. If you make $360 a year in Bangladesh, you're doing great. It's a different standard of measure, a different way, and a different scale. And that concept, I believe, has a lot of relevance to us. When Hashem created the world, Hashem created it with certain immutable laws of nature. There are certain bedrock universal laws that work throughout this universe. Gases tend to expand. Heat tends to rise. Heavy objects tend to fall. No matter what part of the universe, no matter what section of which galaxy, those are the operating rules throughout the cosmos. Those are immutable laws of nature. Just as Hashem created the physical world with immutable laws, with solid rock granite laws, that never change. So too Hashem created this spiritual world with such laws. One of the laws of the spiritual world is something called din. Din is very simple. Din is something called accountability. You did X, you caused it, you are responsible. That is an immutable law of nature. If you brought this about, you are held accountable for it, you're responsible, and you will bear whatever it brings. However, Hashem kaviyachol could be recognized the fact that if Hashem were to create the world with din, the world could not exist. Because din is very exacting and very demanding. And if you're not sure I'm right, walk into any prison and ask them how many thousands of violations they were caught doing for which they're sitting in prison. All right, 100, 15, 20?
20.
One time. You get caught one time breaking into a bank, robbing someone, mugging someone, whatever your crime is, you have to be caught one time and you're put away for 10 years, 20 years, whatever your punishment is. And so the Sharm says, don't you understand that's what any chait is? Hashem, the King of Kings, the Creator of the heavens and earth, said, don't do it. But Hashem isn't just your King, He's your Creator, He's the one who keeps you in existence, He's the one who keeps the very molecules of your skin, of your bones, of your body, exactly where they are. And while He was right there in your presence, not hiding somewhere, but watching you, you had the audacity to say, I don't care about the King's laws and I will violate them. And more than that, those laws were for your good. It says in Mesillat Sharim, if din was an operation in this world, it would be over. One sin, one time, becharon af, with anger, with fury, every human being would be done with. However, Hashem kaviyachol saw that the world would have no kiyum. There would be no world in existence. And therefore Hashem did not create the world with midas ha-din. Hashem mitigated it with something called midas ha-rachamim. Din exists, but midas ha-rachamim, the midah of mercy, rules. And what that means is there are different scales of measure. In Bangladesh, $360 is a lot of money. In the United States of America, it isn't. What scale of measurement you use will determine whether this man is rich or dirt poor. What measurement, din or rachamim, will determine who this person is, how he's to be dealt with, what punishment is to be meted out. And din and rachamim are sort of a sliding scale. It's not 100% or zero. It sort of shifts. It moves over. There are certain times of the year when there's more rachamim, certain times of the year where there's more din. And we're told over and over on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, daven, ask for mercy because mercy is more prevalent there. It's easier to get an easier judgment. Hashem judges more favorably. On that dimmer switch between 100 and zero, the sliding scale went much more to rachamim. It's much easier. You judge much more favorably. Make use of it. Understanding that concept is a very big deal for success in life, because there are certain things that changes from that din, from rachamim to din, or back the other way. One of those things, by the way, is how you judge other people. The way you judge other people becomes mishpat, becomes justice, and that's how you're judged. That switch moves over. If you had originally it was 80% rachamim, but you're a tokif, you're a very demanding human being, and you're very critical and judgmental of others and very harsh. So if it was originally supposed to be 80% mercy and only 20% din, it could be it slides over a bit. It's 60-40, maybe 50-50. And clearly the more that lever goes over towards din, the more difficult it is to come out clean, the more difficult it is to come out alive. If you'd like to understand how it is that I could daven for you, I will never change you with my tefillah. I won't make you a different person. I won't make you or what you've done different. But I can change the system that Hashem uses to judge you. You see, Hashem responds to the tefillahs of Jews, and Hashem responds, and you can shift it from din to rachamim or the other way. And if enough Jews get together and daven and beg, it changes the system of judgment. It doesn't change the person. It doesn't change what he did. But it changes the way he's judged. And it's very, very different being judged with mercy or being judged with strict justice instead of an egregious, horrific act. Listen, you got to understand where he's coming from. You got to understand his background. You have to understand what his life's about. He didn't really understand. He didn't mean it. He didn't know. And when you judge a person with rachamim, what you find is very quickly the sin is not so great. It's pardonable. It's forgivable. And the person might well be granted life. But it's not that the person changes, not that their history changes, not that what they've done changed. The system of judgment, the scale changes. And when the scale changes, the judgment changes, it becomes a very different din. Now, my friends, I'd like to share with you what I believe the Ora Chaim is saying. You see, what the Ora Chaim is saying is we don't have a clue to what the creation of man was about. When Hashem created Adam, Hashem said, "This is your world. Do with it what you feel you should do with it. You are a Baal Bechira. You're a man with free will. Go out there and run the world." And man was given total, complete reign to do whatever he wanted, exactly as he wanted. And that's what free will is about. And man has total, complete autonomy to do whatever he wants. He could cut down the trees, he could burn down the Amazon jungle, he could kill all the animals in the Sahara, he could do whatever he wants to do. But a strange thing happens when he meets another man. You see, when Reuven, for whom the entire world would have been created, walks over to Shimon, who is another man for whom the entire world would have been created, a very strange thing happens. Reuven makes the decision to kill Shimon. And Reuven can kill any other creature on this planet, whether it be an antelope, a zebra, a giraffe, he can kill it, and there's no one who asks a question. But when he pulls out that gun and holds it at Shimon's head, there's a big question that comes up. Who gave you the right to affect another human being? That's an Adam. Do you know what you're trying to do? You're trying to change the course of destiny of a man for whom the entire heavens and earth would have been created for? Who gave you the right? And when Reuven pulls out that gun, there is a major diyun, there is a major judgment in Shemayim. Do you have the right to do that? Do you have the right to kill Shimon or not? But you see, my friends, that's the answer. It's a judgment, it's a question, it's a diyun. There is a judgment in Shemayim at that moment, and when Shimon pulls out that gun, there's a judgment. Does he have the right to kill that other person or not? Is that person innocent? Is he guilty? But that person that he's holding the gun to is now being judged. And when the question is revisited, the answer may not be the same as it was at a different time. It depends on who he is now. It depends on the circumstances now. It depends on what's happening. You see, what the Ora Chaim is saying was very simple. When the brothers surrounded Yosef, Yosef was in very serious trouble. You know why? Because there were 11 shifteikah who were challenging him for his right to existence. And that means in Shemayim there was a judgment that had to be opened up. Do they have the right or do they not have the right to end this human being's life? Well, we have to judge this person. Let's look at who he is. Let's look at his history. Let's look at what he's going to do. Let's look at where he's holding. Let's judge him. Yosef would have been judged. And it's not so simple when a person's judged. What Reuven did was take him away from the Bechira of Adam, take him out of the clutches of human beings, put him into the snakes and the scorpions, because then he's untouchable. Because Yosef was a tzaddik. And as a tzaddik, he didn't warrant death. It was very, very unlikely that Yosef had a psak din of the previous Rosh Hashanah for Misa. And therefore, what Reuven did was, he put him into the snakes and the scorpions, knowing full well that Yosef would be untouchable, because it's very, very unlikely that Sonic of his stature could be killed by mere snakes and scorpions, because that can only happen if on the previous Rosh Hashanah, he was judged Lamisa. But had Yosef the Tzaddik been put in the clutches of human beings, it's a different ballgame. And the reason why it's different is because the judgment is reopened, it's now revisited, there's a new court case. And when there's a new court case, everything is brought up again, everything is revisited. You don't know if it's the same balance of din and rachamim, you don't know what happens. And when a human being is judged, it's a very risky, very scary business. Therefore, Reuven said, That's too dangerous. Take him out of the brother's hands. Put him into the snakes and the scorpions. And my friends, when you hear this, you get a vastly different understanding of what life is about. When we walk down the street, we get terrified by a large dog. If you're put into a bear's den, we'd be trembling. Oh my goodness. What this Chazal is telling us quite simply is don't be afraid of the lions and tigers and bears. Be afraid of man. But not because man's going to kill you, stab you, punch you, kick you. Be afraid of man because the power given to man. A human being was given such power, such significance, such importance that if I insult him, if I really, really degrade him, if I put him down and he curses me, who knows what that'll bring up. I know for sure if he tries to stab me, it will reopen my judgment, reopen the issue of whether I have a right to live or not. I'll be rejudged and I don't know what'll happen. But even if it never goes that far, if he says words to me, if he gets angry at me, I don't know what happens. But I do know that oftentimes the judgment is reopened, the court case is revisited, and it's a very scary thing. And what it means, my friends, is don't be afraid of the lions and tigers and bears, be afraid of man. Be afraid of the power given to man. Be afraid of the dignity of another human being. Be afraid of what you say and how you say, because know in front of whom you're speaking. You're speaking in front of Adam, the handcraft of Hashem, the reason for creation. You're speaking in front of the Yetzir, the pinnacle of Hashem's creation, and be very guarded with what you say. And I think this is a very different understanding. I believe that's exactly what the Or HaChaim is saying. The Or HaChaim is not speaking words of apikursis. He is not saying that Hashem is not in control of the world. Believe me, the Or HaChaim read the Chovos HaLevavos. He knew all of the various Rishonim. He was not saying words of heresy. He was saying a very deep concept. And that deep concept is that man was given powers well beyond what we understand. The powers to bring up the judgment again, the powers for Hashem to revisit that issue. And when you hear this, I think you can also understand the answer for Rashi. You see, I believe the answer for this Rashi really is quite simple. This night was Makas Bechoros. This was the time of retribution, of justice. This was the time when the just dues were to be paid back to the Mitzrim. This was a time of extreme din. And in that situation, very few human beings will walk out clean. When the reshus is given to the mashris lahashris, it doesn't mean that the permission is given to the avenging angel to just indiscriminately kill. It means there's a different system of judgment. The angel of death is given permission, act in a very different manner. Because the judgment system is different. It's a time of din. That scale has moved from mercy to din. And there are very few people who, according to strict justice, would be able to claim a right to live. And Jew, if you leave your house, you're taking your life in your hands. Why? Because it's a different time period. It's no longer Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's not a time of Ratzon. It's not a time of mercy. It's quite the opposite. It's a time of din. And walking in the street in a time of din is very frightening, very scary, very dangerous. And I believe that that's exactly what Rashi is sharing with us, which is again a very different understanding of life. And now, I'd like to do one more step before I hopefully tie some pieces together. And that one more step is as follows. Every once in a while, you'll hear about a very traumatic, very difficult funeral. A young person dies. And you hear that it's not just a young person, it's a young person you know, and you know very well. And remarkably, it's the last person in the world that you'd expect. Because of all the people, she or he was the one who had the greatest midos, the greatest avodas Hashem, the person who was the exemplary Baal Chesed, the person who you thought for sure was a tzaddik. Surely that person should live. And everyone has a kasha. How could it be such a good person dies young? How could it be? What does it mean? And I'd like to share with you something that the Chassam Sofer says. In Yerideah, and the B'suchei Chosem, in his introduction to Yerideah, the Chassam Sofer says as follows. He quotes the Rambam, who wrote to his son, Rebbe Avram, and the Rambam said these words. Praise be he who completes his years quickly without troubles to his soul. What the Rambam apparently was saying to his son Avram was, Baruch Hashem, every once in a while you hear about a person who dies young. A person who finishes his years quickly without troubling his son, his soul. And then the Chassam Sofer explains what this means. He says, there's no measure for that completion. Meaning, don't think that it takes 80 years, 70 years, 60 years for a person to complete their role on this earth. He says it's not true. Chassam Sofer says, if a person is diligent, focused, and makes all the right decisions at a very tender young age, they will have reached perfection and they will have finished their purpose in existence. He says it doesn't take that long. And as a matter of fact, what usually happens is the person in his youth makes some mistakes, takes a wrong turn, takes a wrong path, and then he has to spend many, many years correcting that. Says Chassam Sofer, sometimes a person has to live even to be 60, sometimes even 70 years, sometimes a person has to live to be 80 years old. Why? Because he has to correct the mistakes of his youth. Those are his words. And more than that, what he says is an astounding question. He has a question. Listen to this question. How could it be that sometimes you find a tzaddik who lives to 70, 80, 90 years old? How could it be? He clearly reached a level of perfection earlier. That's the Chassam Sofer's question. He says the answer is, obviously, that person reached perfection long ago, but their reason why they're here is because they're a benefit to their children, a benefit to their Talmidim, they're a benefit to others, hence it's beneficial to them as well, but no one understands they reached their level of perfection long ago. And what that means, my friends, in plain simple terms is, when you go to that levaya of a young person, when you hear people bemoaning and trying to answer the question, how could it be? Is it a punishment to the parents? Maybe it's a kapara to the generation. That may be true, but it may also be quite simple. It may quite simply be that that person made all the right choices, all the right moves, and they reached their level of perfection. They perfected themselves, and they don't need to be in this world any longer. The exact opposite of the way we look at it. We see a young person dying, we say, what a tragedy, what a horrible, horrible thing. Where's the justice? Where's Hashem's mercy? How could Hashem be so cruel? Says Chassam Sofer, you got it exactly backwards. Totally the opposite. It may very well be that that person perfected themselves, reached a very high level very quickly. They don't need to be here that much longer, and they've done their job, and they've left. And that, my friends, is a very, very different way of viewing life than we usually view it. And that is a very, very different way of understanding a person's purpose in being here. And most people don't do that. But most people live up to a small percentage of their capacity. And if it's 60%, 50%, 20%, 10%, but every once in a while you see a person who from a young age just gets it all right, step after step, level after level, and they hit that pinnacle way early. And we all look at it and say, what a tragedy they left the world young. But my friends, it's a very, very simple thought to recognize that every one of us, within a few short years, whether it's 50, whether it's 100, will not be here. Will be in a very different state, and the only question is what state we left this world in. And what the Chassam Sofer is doing is sharing with us a vastly different way of viewing the world. I think this Rashi teaches us a tremendous lesson. And when the permission is given to the Mashkis to destroy, he doesn't distinguish between Tzaddik v'Rosha. You know why he doesn't distinguish? Not because there's no justice, not because Hashem is not fair, but because when there's din operating, when strict judgment is operating, very few human beings will ever, ever pass. One of the great secrets in life is trying not to engage din. I've said this to my wife a number of times. There are certain issues I will not get involved in. There was a certain Shalom Bayis issue, and I told my wife, I will not touch it. I will not get involved. My wife said, why not? They need it. I will not do it. because I knew that not only wouldn't I bring any help, either he or she would curse me for the next 30 years. And that's a very, very risky situation to be in. To have a human being hate you, something that you do if you have to do it. If you could accomplish much good, if you could change a person's life, it's probably worth having a human being hate you. But if you don't think you're going to accomplish much good, having a human being hate you is a very frightening thought. Not because they hate me, not because they're going to make faces at me. They're not paying my mortgage before, they're not paying my mortgage after. But if you know the power given to a human being, if you know the power given to human beings, curse, if you know the power given to a person, you quickly understand that a human being is worthy of being feared. What the Arachayim is teaching us is a tremendous lesson. Snakes, scorpions, they're not frightening. They are frightening to us because we don't know who we are. And it might well have been on a previous Rosh Hashanah, I was given a Gzar Din of Misa. And this dog who's chasing me down the street might be the method that Hashem is bringing to bring the Gzar Din earlier. But if you're a tzaddik, if you're pure, if you're confident in the fact that you got a decree last Rosh Hashanah of living, you're not afraid of snakes, scorpions, bears, they're irrelevant, they can't touch you, because Hashem is a shofet mishpat, Hashem runs every part of this world, Hashem is right there. However, man is a bit different. You see, even if you're Yosef at tzaddik, a man is a scary thought, because man was given free will. Free will means he's given reign, he's given control, he's given rulership. And when a human being pulls out a gun and holds it to your head, that's a very scary thought. Not because bullets kill, but it's a very scary thought because right now I'm being rejudged. He is a Baal Bechira, he's a man with free will, and he's wishing that I should be dead. And those wishes have to be dealt with. And in Shemayim they open up the case and they ask, does he have the right to determine that I should die? And when that question is asked, it's a question. Maybe I warrant living, maybe I don't. But having that question asked is a very frightening thought. And you don't know where you're holding at the time, you don't know what merit you have, you don't know what merit you don't have, and it's not a very wise situation to be in. But that was Reuven's understanding. Take him from the brother's clutches, put him into the snakes and the scorpions where he's safe, because only man really has power in this world to do what? To reopen the judgment. But when you understand that, you understand the world in vastly different ways. You understand what tefillah is about. When I stand in front of Hashem and I daven, I don't say to Hashem, "Kum tzumir, it's coming to me. I deserve a parnasa, I deserve a shidduch, I deserve all these things. I don't deserve anything, I don't claim to be deserving." I ask Hashem for mercy, and I ask Hashem to judge me with a different system. Don't use judgment. Don't use din. Slide the scale over from din to rachamim. Look at me with mercy. Judge me favorably. In the same way that I daven for myself, that way I daven for others. When the name goes up on the tilling board and you hear the horrible story, you daven with tears in your eyes. You don't daven to change the person. You don't think you're going to change the person. You ask Hashem to deal with rachamim. Look with mercy. Judge the person favorably. And that changes the whole din, it changes the whole system, and that changes everything. You could be a very wealthy man in Bangladesh with $1,000 a year income, but that's because the scale of measurement over there is vastly different than it is in the Western world. But your scale of measurement, the way you judge things, has to be based on the perspective, on the situation. If the din were operating, it would be a very frightening thought. If a Jew who was in Mitzrayim left his house on the night of Machas Bechoros, it was not so simple that he would make it back to his house, because the Mashchis, the avenging angel, was given permission. What that means is din was in the air. You might be in your house safe, walk out in the street, you're in deep jeopardy. Why? Because it's a different system, judgment. It's a system of strict din, and that's something that's not so simple that very few people can walk through. And this understanding, I think, is a very, very different understanding of davening, of power given to man, of many of the forces that operate in our world. And I'd like to close with one last thought. And that thought is something that I guarantee at some point in your life you will need. Unfortunately, you'll hear it now, and you'll likely forget it. And I guarantee that at some point in your life, you'll desperately need this concept, and I'm a spallow that we should remember it when we need it. That concept, that which Chazal say, Afilu cherev chodam unachas atzavoro shel adam, even if a sharp sword is resting on a man's throat, al tiyayish menarachamim, he should not give up from hoping for mercy. Chazal are very specific, very guarded, and very careful in their word choices. Even if the sword, not the sword of the guy down the block, not the sword in the scabbard, even if the sword is right here on my neck, sharp sword on my neck, do not give up hope of mercy. What this means in plain language is really quite simple. 5 years ago, you got the prognosis, you went through chemo, and they gave you a clean bill of health. And it returned the second time, and you beat it again, and now it's the third time. At this point, you get it. The sharp sword is on your throat. There's no hope. You're dead. You're at death's doorstep. There's no hope. And my friends, I want you to hear well what I'm saying. According to the ways of the world, you should read the signs very carefully, very clearly. It's over. Everyone has given up hope. Your doctors have given up hope. They even stopped saying Tehillim for you in the shul. They know it's over. And that probably is correct. If you read the signs as the signs are read, it is over. There is no hope. But it's in that situation that Chazal is speaking and saying one specific point. You are correct. According to the ways of judgment, according to din, it's over and there is no hope. You will not change yourself. You will not become meritorious. It's clear that you're paskin lemisa. It's clear that you're given a judgment for death, and there's nothing you're going to do to change yourself. However, there is something that can save you. And that's if you change the system of judgment. If the lever moves from din to rachamim, if it moves 2 steps, 3 steps, 10 steps, it's a whole different judgment. Not that you changed, not that you became warranted to live, not that you became a different human being, but the system of judgment is different, and now it's a whole new judgment. And now, in fact, you might well get a psak din of life, living. Al tiyayish min rachamim means don't give up hope. Not because you're going to change, but don't give up hope, because it's very simple for a Jew to save his life by sliding that scale over from din to rachamim. And that's the great yisod of davening, the great yisod of understanding our relationship with Hashem. May Hashem grant us understanding to put this into practice. May this be an ilu neshama, shenanecha, bas shalom.
You've been listening to The Shmooze, presented by Teferis B'nai Torah. For more information on The Shmooze, please visit us at www.theshmooze.com, where you can download all The Shmoozin' free of charge, as well as view source sheets and address questions or comments on this or any other Shmooze. The Shmooze is completely funded by private donations. We need your help to continue our work. All donations are tax-deductible and count as miser. Please help us help others by calling 866-613-TORAH. That's 866-613-TORAH. Or you can make your donation right on the web at www.theshmooze.com.